The following is one of a series of spiritual conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and teaches at the Pontifical Institute for Advanced Studies in Catholic Doctrine at St. John's University, New York. Father is well known as a lecturer, retreat master, and author. These conferences are deigned to help anyone, priest, religious, or layman, who is seriously striving for perfection to advance in the spiritual life. They will be worth listening to over and over again to delve into the depths of the truths of our faith. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, The Value of Suffering in the Life of Christian Perfection. Father Hardin.
So the role of suffering in the pursuit of Christian perfection. As always, I think it is useful to first ask ourselves, why get into the subject at all? Although we are dealing with the subject academically, it is by no means an academic subject, particularly in its relationship to the sanctity to which we all aspire. One reason, I think, why it is well worth going into is that suffering by itself is not sanctifying. A lot of people who are suffering are not necessarily profiting from their suffering. Evidently, then, we're supposed to do something with and about the suffering to profit from the experience. Hence the importance of knowing what suffering is and how we can alchemize it from mere pain to sanctity. Moreover, the role of suffering in the spiritual life is ultimately based on mysteries of our faith. And as with so many mysteries, we are liable to live with them without attempting to fathom them. That's a mistake. We can never fully comprehend their meaning. But suffering is surely a mystery. It is one thing which needs to be better understood, just simply better understood, so that as with other mysteries, we may then more effectively, in this case not merely speculate about this mystery. Oh, this is one mystery you just don't read about. This is one mystery you experience. Finally, there is such a thing, and we may have time after the, I guess you might call this, the set lecture is finished, to get into. I will not directly touch on it, but I think I should raise it as one reason why it is well reflecting theologically on the meaning of suffering. There is such a thing as making the mistake of identifying progress in virtue with the amount of suffering. And is that ever hard to dissociate? Once people have made that wrong identification, sure, suffering has much to do with sanctity, but do not make it an arithmetic equation. Suffering equals sanctity. So then, the more suffering, the more holy I must be getting. Well, maybe, but maybe not. In other words, those who suffer the most are not necessarily more holy. than those who suffer less. It is what we do with the suffering, not the amount that we experience. All of this needs to be clarified. I repeat, not get into the issues that I have raised except obliquely, because there are more basic things to deal with, and then hopefully in the time afterwards we can discuss at greater length some of these points. Our scope of coverage will be three areas. First, to ask, what is suffering? Second, why is there suffering in the world? And thirdly, how can we use the sufferings that God sends us or offers us to grow in holiness? What then is suffering? As with all ultimates, and suffering is one of them, this is then an experience that cannot be finally defined, where definition means that you can neatly summarize it in a well-rounded sentence. Suffering is, and by the end of the sentence, you tell what it is. It is much too deep and much too mysterious. But it does have certain features. Now, this is speaking in general, drawing very minimally on the faith, though our faith always sheds light on everything, including things that, say, we might have or people have who don't have the faith. Because, let's remind ourselves, it's not only believers who suffer. I have six features, and I stopped because, well, I wanted to have three parts to this lecture, and there's more to say than just reflecting on what is suffering. Suffering on earth, we are therefore distinguishing suffering beyond this world. We know there is suffering, and it's well to remind ourselves there is suffering beyond this world, which, by the way, is not a bad motive for putting up with suffering in this world. Suffering on earth is a uniquely human experience. Only human beings suffer. Animals have pain, but in the sense in which we are using the term, and in the way in which Revelation or the Church, in speaking of suffering, talks about it, animals do not suffer. In other words, they have pain because we don't have enough vocabulary. We say the poor dog is suffering. Well, not quite, as we'll see before we finish the analysis. Second, suffering always involves the whole person, body, spirit, and emotions. Even though the pain may be centered or may begin in only one part of our being, but suffering, properly speaking, affects the whole person. The pain may be in our hand or foot, or head, but we suffer. And St. Paul makes a lot of this. When one part of the body is in pain, the whole body suffers. So suffering pertains to the whole person. Thirdly, suffering is therefore, to use very modern terminology, psychosomatic. It necessarily includes the spiritual faculties, which is, of course, the reason then why an animal does not really suffer, because the animal has no mind. Fourth, we may classify suffering, and by now psychologists of suffering have made all sorts of categories. Here is one classification, mainly based on origin, on where the suffering begins. It may be physical suffering, where the origin is in the body, or emotional, where the origin is in the feelings, or psychological, where it is in the mind. Unfortunately, most of us are quite unaware of psychological suffering, properly so called, having for 4.5 years while teaching at the State University in Michigan got myself to be appointed a weekend chaplain at the local state hospital and came to know hundreds of patients. Psychological suffering, which begins in the mind, is intense, especially since most of these people are not all of the time, indeed most of the time, psychotic. Yet they know that somehow they are not normal, and their realization of their abnormality is a pain that only those who have it can describe. Fourth, social suffering. Now this has surfaced a great deal in modern social science. It arises from the multitudinous interpersonal relations where people are the source of our suffering. And of course, if they are to us, be sure we are to them. And finally, and this is especially on faith, there is spiritual suffering, of which the great mystics were the best and most eloquent witnesses. Where it is in the innermost part of one's being, that's our fourth feature, that suffering has varieties, or can be classified. Fifth, suffering is conscious pain. I've got three definitions, and I could have added five more, but I want to bring one thing out. Now, while much of this, of course, comes from book knowledge, a lot of it does not. Suffering is conscious pain. It is awareness of pain. It is reflection on pain. It is the knowing that I am in pain. So that the source of the suffering may have lasted a moment. A cruel word, but the suffering can last for years because the awareness perhaps, cannot be wiped out. Sixth and finally, in my own very brief description of what suffering is, suffering differs. It is differentiated as much as people differ. There are, I have, five differences. There is, first of all, a threshold of suffering. No two people are equally sensitive in this matter. And it's no comfort to be told, I am hypersensitive. Well, I am. And the simple fact is that we should recognize that some have a lower, some have a higher threshold of suffering. The least thing can trigger one person, another, thick-skinned or thick-hide, I guess hided. There is a threshold. Second, there is a variety of suffering. Somehow the personality enters into and changes the very nature of each person's suffering so that no two people's is really the same. The very individual, therefore, somehow is part of the unique nature of that person's suffering that no one else has, no two persons are identical, ever duplicates. Third, suffering differs among people in the span of suffering. In the span of suffering, that is, in the, well, the number of things which can make a person suffer. Some persons are practically, well, if not completely, immune, almost immune to certain kinds of suffering. That's good to know. And the more you deal with souls and the more intimately they share their deepest convictions with you, the more you discover that some people are, and you can't call them obtuse, because in other areas they can be very sensitive. And I found in ways that I cannot explain, how can you explain this mystery? That the very same person who can be very sensitive in one area can be positively insensitive in other areas. And all you need is those two people in the same community, and the suffering on both sides can be indescribable. And both sincere human beings, the one is simply unaffected by what other people say. The other winces, not when they say something, the least twitch of the muscles of their face. And they're hurt. The way she looked at me. Well, how do you know? Oh, I know. Another person couldn't care less. So the span, the endurance of suffering, this is how much some people can take. And this is isolating any given type of suffering. Some can take so much and no more. And then, as I've discovered with my patients, whom I came to know to over 500, we began with about 25 for Sunday Mass, in the hospital auditorium. Kind of an oddity to be seeing Mass on the stage with a handful of patients and their attendants at Mass. By the time I left, we had 545 for confessions, and we had built a $250,000 chapel, the first in the state of Michigan, on state hospital premises. And we managed to get the Blessed Sacrament reserved permanently in a special Blessed Sacrament chapel. You want to visit it sometime in Kalamazoo, Michigan, colonial style, beautiful. I fell in love with those people, and more than once I thought to myself, all this academic nonsense, these big long words and all this theological jargon, that's for the birds. Here's real life. And what they told me, many things about human nature that normal people would never have taught me, because in large measure they were the victims of human cruelty, most of them. And they just couldn't take it. No fault of theirs. So much, and they broke. So there was endurance. No two people are the same. And how valuable this is to know in living with others. And sadly, they often don't show it. In fact, some people are positively geniuses in hiding their suffering. You wish sometimes they would pour it out, but often they don't. Finally, the sources of suffering. That is, what brings on suffering in one person, this is different from what I said before, because the source is not just, say, words that people speak or experience that we have, or say, some disease or sickness in the body. The source is often the circumstances in which the suffering occurs, so that in other circumstances, the same thing could be borne with complete equanimity. It may be as simple a thing as the time of day, or the things that are on the mind at the time that this further thing happens. And it's enough to trigger a chain reaction of suffering. One last observation I have. We were just talking about what is suffering, weren't we? One last observation. I consider suffering a good index of personality. That is, what causes a person suffering, how much they can take, how long they can endure it, what their span is. In other words, what makes them suffer, how they suffer, why they suffer. If you know that, you know the person. And I've met husbands living with their wives for 40 years. Thick blockheads, by the way, men can be awfully thick-headed, honest, when it comes to feelings, not realizing how much this wife has been suffering, and mainly perhaps because of him. Why didn't she say something? Well, you goof. That's the whole problem. You never gave a chance to. At any rate, Suffering is a good index of a person. Now we ask, why is there suffering in the world? And we're talking about this world. When we ask why, we must immediately distinguish between two kinds of whys. Why in terms of origin, and why in terms of purpose. The first why, then, asks, why has suffering come into the world? How did it get here? And the second is, now that it's here, what good is it? Those are not the same question. And answering the one does not really answer the other. Consequently, we should look at this question on both levels. First, why as to origin. The simple and unequivocal answer of our faith is, there is suffering because there has been sin. That's our faith. Philosophers over the centuries, say in the non-Christian world, speculate, have written libraries, and a whole religion, Buddhism, has been built on the question of why suffering. And Buddha finally concluded, why is there suffering? Because there is existence. And he therefore said, to exist is to suffer. There cannot be existence without suffering. That is not Christianity. Suffering need not have been. It's our faith. Sin, then, is God's retribution for sin. Now, by retribution, we don't mean in any just punitive sense, vindictive sense, but it is the consequence of sin on every level, of original sin first. Therefore, we can say correctly that fallen human nature is suffering human nature. And if you ask why human nature suffers, well, because first reason, it's fallen. And a large part of our suffering is the struggle and the conflict between, as Paul tells us, what we want to do and don't do, or do and shouldn't do. So, it is first of all the consequence of original sin. Secondly, the consequence of social sin. Therefore, sinful society is a suffering society. And our country has a coming. And you don't have to be a Jeremiah to say that.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.